This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Welcome to the Sword and Laser, episode number 112. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm a little distracted. Oh? I mean, I'm Tom Merritt.
Why are you a little distracted?
Well, because the Cardinals are playing the Giants in the thing, the sports ball.
Is it because we are winning right now in game
right
two?
Right now, maybe
are we
you are.
Right now?
Oh,
5-1?
I didn't know you played for the Giants, Veronica. When did you sign with them?
Okay, I see what you're doing there. It's not very nice because I'm just trying to be a team player, a team supporter.
I thought you were a Red Sox fan anyway.
Well, different leagues. It's
true, and they're not playing the Red Sox. So.
No, they're not playing the Red Sox. I am a Giants fan and also a Red Sox fan, much as you are an A's fan and also a Cardinals fan.
And also a Giants fan.
And so. Also a Giants fan.
Third,
you're a Giants fan third.
Yeah.
Your Skype connection sounds like crap again. Did you know that?
What happened? It was fine.
It was fine before, but now it's not fine, but it's fine. If it gets worse, I'll tell you. They were just complaining. Right. I want them to know in the audience that it's your Skype connection and not my terrible editing.
I don't know what it would be because ruin the magic of podcasting, but we just recorded the G. Willow Wilson interview and it was perfectly fine.
It was pretty good.
Of course we haven't recorded the G. Willow Wilson interview yet because we're going to talk to her later in the show.
Yes. Of course, as Tom just mentioned, we are having a graphic novelist and author G. Willow Wilson on the show. She is the author of a few different graphic novels, including Air, Cairo, Vixen. And she also has an autobiography called The Butterfly Mosque, A Young American Woman's Journey to Love and Islam. And just recently this summer came out with Aleph the Unseen, which she'll talk more about later. Aleph the Unseen. Thank you for correcting me.
It's like Saladin Ahmed.
Got you. Yeah, I'm bad at pronouncing most things, so that's not surprising.
It's all right. I'm sure I'm not any better. I just happen to know that one.
You just happened to hear her say the word earlier
now,
in the interview
because we haven't talked to her yet, Veronica.
We're in a wormhole.
How could I have heard her say it?
We're in a time schism. But anyway, first we kick off the show with a segment called What Are We Drinking?
And if you don't like it, fast forward.
Be nice. First of all, I am drinking a 2009 Sasso Tondo Ciasleggiolo Toscana.
I was ready to be impressed. I thought, because you nailed that first word.
Ciasleggiolo.
I have no idea.
Ciasleggiolo.
Toscana. I know
Toscana.
The last.
It's good.
So it's Italian, I'm guessing.
It has chocolatey hints. Uh-oh. My Chinese food is here.
That's unfortunate.
I'm just going to let that ring itself out until Ryan gets it because he's watching the game upstairs. This is real. This is like reality podcasting right now.
This is how we keep the podcast real.
This is how we keep it. This wouldn't happen in the YouTube show.
That's right.
No, there'd be no
this
ringing phone.
Difference.
For the
this is what
show.
You get.
But anyway, what are you drinking?
I'm having a 2011 Black Mountain Vineyard Pinot Noir from Haro Hills.
Excellent. Is it good? Are you enjoying it?
Quite tasty, very fruity, which, you know, it's wine. It's made of fruit. But even for wine, kind of fruity. Not very much of a bite to it. Very smooth.
Excellent. All right, but let's kick off the show with our actual first segment, which is known as the Quick Burns.
Our friend, can we call them our friends?
I think so. If they were on the show, they're our friends now.
And Ty Frank, the authors that make up James S.A. Corey, are doing a Star Wars novel.
This is surprising to me, but also not surprising to me.
It's kind of awesome.
It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I didn't think of them doing a Star Wars novel, so I'm like, oh my gosh, that's weird. That's cool. But on the other hand, having read Leviathan Wakes and Caliban's War, I can't wait to see what they do in the Star Wars universe. It will be written by James S. A. Corey and will focus on Han Solo.
Yeah, and there's also another. So this is all part of a big announcement that Del Rey made at New York Comic Con this past week. So there's going to be a couple of different books. I think, two new upcoming books. The first one is Kenobi, and that's going to be by John Jackson Miller. And that's going to be more about Obi-Wan, you know, more about living his life as Ben. And that's coming out in 2013.
It's a little cheesy with the graphic. I think it's going to be a good book.
Well, do they have to make him look like Ewan McGregor on the cover?
They have the Ewan McGregor, and it says Kenobi.
Kenobi.
In big letters. Yeah.
Whatever, it's epic.
Released in late 2013. But the James S. A. Corey one's going to be in the Rebels standalone novel. It'll be the third in the Rebels series, which they're series, but they're standalone. It's kind of confusing. They all take place between Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. So that Splinter of the Mind's Eye era.
Mm-hmm. And also, Neil Gaiman is coming out with a new novel, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which will be published on June 19th, 2013.
This
sounds so good.
So in. Gosh, been waiting for a new Neil Gaiman for too long.
Since 2005.
Yeah.
Anansi Boys came out in 2005.
I mean, if he was writing a series, people would be beating him up.
They'd be really
kind
mad.
Kind of a smart man, but he's not writing a series.
This sounds cool. So it has to do... Well, I don't want to give too much of the plot away because you can read about it on the Wort Zone if you're interested. But basically, the narrator encounters three women at the end of a, quote, ramshackle farm at the end of the lane. Now, the youngest of them claims that her duck pond is an ocean, hence the title, and the oldest one can remember the Big Bang. So I feel like there's something crazy going on, of course.
Oh, man. I can't wait.
And for some reason, I don't know why... It's making me feel like what was the book that we read earlier for the club?
American Gods?
With the angel and the demon.
Oh, Good Omens.
For some reason, it already has a kind of Good Omens vibe to me.
We're going to be reading in November. We're going to be reading Dirty Streets of Heaven, mm-hmm. which also has a little bit of a Good Omens vibe. So there's Good Omens all around. That's some Good Omens.
It's a good Omens for genre fiction, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. Amazon Studios is optioning its first novel, Seed, for a crowdsourced big screen adaptation. It's kind of a convoluted and controversial and hard to follow thing if you're not following the whole Amazon thing.
Wait, how is it crowdsourced? I missed that part.
So the Southern horror book Seed will be turned into a film.
Mm-hmm.
The book is by Anita Alborn. It's an Amazon product. Mm-hmm. It was published by 47 North, which is Amazon's sci-fi, fantasy, and horror imprint.
Mm-hmm.
It was self-published, so it's a little bit of a poster child for Amazon's digital content. And it will be crowdsourced in that they've optioned it for a film, and then they will open it up for people to pitch them on the script.
Oh.
And they will pick from the people who are pitching them that the folks who will actually end up writing the script.
I missed that part of the story somehow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But of course, optioning a movie means virtually nothing.
Exactly.
Days,
and that's still true, even with Amazon Studios.
Because so many books get optioned and so many scripts get optioned. And it's just, it's such a drop in the well. So I would
Amazon
love to
Studios
see
has optioned 10,000 movie scripts and 1,800 series pilot scripts in addition to original content submitted by users. And none of those were novels. So that's what makes this different is they're actually taking a novel and saying, let's turn that into a script.
If all of this stuff is being optioned, why do we see nothing but sequels in the movie theaters?
Well, because Amazon hasn't actually greenlit any of these yet. So Amazon Studios hasn't even started this. And I think... If I read all this stuff right, what Amazon's going to do is turn these into movies and TV shows that will be on Amazon Prime.
That's awesome.
As original content.
There's too much original content in the world now, Tom.
Are you calling for a stop
to original content? There's too much content for the eyeballs.
You know what, though? That's always been true. We just didn't know it existed because it got hidden in people's drawers.
No,
so
YouTube. is you know, as part of the YouTube, like,
yeah,
you know, our show being part of this, and also having another show now, from the Tech Feed channel is being part of this. I'm like, you know what? There needs to be less, because spread out too much.
There needs to be an easier way for people to find the good stuff that they want.
Right.
That's kind of, that's what my show Frame Rate is entirely about. It's like, how do you do that?
And watch my new show, Fact or Fictional, on the Tech Feed channel of YouTube. Anyway.
This is not about plugging. Well, maybe it could be. But you just bought the Humble eBook Bundle.
I did. I plugged that on Twitter because I paid for it and bought it. So the Humble eBook Bundle, in case you aren't aware, is a bundle of eBooks that you can buy. And also, a portion of that money will go to charity. Now, the cool thing is that you can choose how much money goes to the authors, which include Cory Doctorow, John Scalzi, Neil Gaiman, and you can decide how much of that goes to the authors, how much of that goes to the charity, and then how much of that of a tip goes to the people who support the Humble eBook Bundle, the website itself, the Humble people.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of the Humble Bundle, they're most famous for the Humble Indie Bundle, which are indie video games.
Right. And so the charity that you would be supporting, there's a couple, the Science Fiction Writers of America, the EFF, and Child's Play. All awesome, worthy charities. I bought my bundle. It's great because not only are there tons of different formats that you can download them to, but you can also have them wirelessly deliver your bundle directly to your Kindle or your ebook reader of choice.
So that's pretty slick.
Yeah, so they use their content delivery methods. You enter in your Kindle or your Nook or whatever their identification email, and it sends it automatically. So I just got like seven or eight emails being like, "We've just delivered all these amazing things to your
So
Kindle."
Now you have to read The Old Man's War by John Scalzi.
Oh, you're right. There's so many good books. I feel like these have all been on my to read list.
Yeah, these are not like, oh, we've got seven books you've never heard of. Some of them might be good. Like Paolo Bacigalupi, Pump Six, Cory Doctorow, Pirate Cinema,
Mercedes
Neil Gaiman
Lackey,
and Dave McKean, Signal to Noise.
Two Kelly Link books, which I think I've actually already paid for. So I'm okay with that, but still, like, I've been waiting to read these books. So it's a great cause, great, great authors, every single one of them, totally worth reading, and you get to support some good causes.
Now, here's the thing. As of this recording, which is Monday, October 15th, there's 7 days and 20 hours remaining.
Ooh.
So this will not last forever. If you're listening to this after October 22nd, we are apologizing that you didn't get around to this earlier.
You should listen to the show faster.
Listen faster. You're doing it wrong. Also, Slashdot had a posting up about a student who has published extensive statistics on the population of Middle Earth. It's a chemical engineering student named Emil Johansson who published a website hoping for it to become a complete Middle Earth genealogy. 10 months later, it's turned into a statistical dream.
Or nightmare, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Only 19% are females in Tolkien's works, and the life expectancy of a hobbit is 96.24 years.
They live a good life. They live a good life. I'm looking at this right now, and it's insane.
Yeah. No, this is you, if you're into Lord of the Rings quite, you know, like, deep, you're going to be in heaven on this site, because, you know, family trees, all kinds of, their dens are all dwarves, men, and then what? Elves, men, Maiar, and Valar.
They did way better than my Ancestry or Jenny.com page. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
They filled
Tom Bombadil, like, by the way, categorized as an anomaly. Don't know what he was.
What is all the hate for Tom Bombadil? He's like the best character in The Hobbit.
There's no hate here. They're
or
just
Lord
saying,
of the Rings, rather.
You don't know what he is.
Sorry,
is
Lord
he Valar? Is he Maiar? Is he Elf? We don't know.
I think we need to start a Tom Bombadil fan club of some kind, or support group for people who are very sad that it never ended up in the movies.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember
The Hobbit. Is he in The Hobbit? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
It's been like 20 years since I've read that book. 30,
well, you'll get
maybe
a chance in December.
I know. Spoiler alert.
It's on the website.
The Hobbit is a December book, Bic. So start reading now if you're behind. I think it's fair to say that we can say what our next two book picks are.
Yeah, I already put them up on the calendar.
Oh, they're on the calendar? Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's good. Speaking of the calendar, we should look at it.
Let's do.
All right, so October 15th, that is today or yesterday, depending on when you download the show. Sword and Laser podcast interview with G. Willow Wilson.
That's what you're listening to right now.
You're listening to this.
It's happening!
On October 16th, we have The 12 by Justin Cronin, Bowl of Heaven by Gregory Benford and Larry Niven, The Walking Dead, The Road to Woodbury by Robert Kirkman and Jay Bonanzinga, The 50-Year Sword by Mark Z. Danielewski, and you didn't highlight October 23rd, so I was going to keep reading. It's Jam by Yahtzee Croshaw. Yahtzee, of course.
You mean I didn't bold it? Here, I'll fix it.
From Zero Punctuation. Yahtzee is also an author in his own right outside of doing his excellent video game reviews at Zero Punctuation for The Escapist. So you should check that out, too, if you're a
fan
of his
online. By the way, Jam is about a post-apocalyptic scenario caused by jam.
Oh.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
He's,
I kind of love
that. He's Australian, though. I feel like it should be
treacle.
Not treacle.
Vegemite.
Vegemite. Thank you.
Yeah, but Vegemite and jam are not the same thing. Jam's sweet.
I know.
I have Marmite in my kitchen right now. I love it. Marmite's not as good as Vegemite. I will give you that, Australians.
It's more relevant.
But it's what I have. October 26th, Sword and Laser Video Guide to Robin Hobb will come out. And then we have the Video Book Club wrap-up of Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell on that same day. Actually, we might... we're going to be changing the schedule up for the video shows after this, so I may do some adjustments. I think these are right, though. The Video Guide to Robin Hobb.
That's definitely coming out. Well, we have to put out that show on the 26th.
Right. Because we're shooting it on the 23rd.
No. We have to put out the Cloud Atlas episode on the 26th because that's when the movie comes out.
Oh, but I think we're changing the Robin Hobb one.
That's the one that may not come out. That one will come out on October 26th.
It's going to come out later. Let me find out when. It's going to come out on November 9th.
If you are a listener of the show, then you know how much I love Robin Hobb. And I've barely gotten up the guts to speak to her at a book signing once. So I'm a little nervous. This is probably the most nervous I've been for an interview since... I was pretty nervous for George R. R. Martin, but for different reasons.
Oh, I was the most nervous I've been.
That was the most nervous?
Yeah.
I was really nervous for the first go at Ted Williams.
Oh, of course.
This may be up to that, but I'm happy to say that we will be having Ted Williams on the video show in the next coming months, so I'm excited about that as well.
Is that going to be in person?
It'll be in person.
Are you going to freak?
No, I've met him in person before now, since then.
Yeah, I know. Are you going to freak?
No. I'll be all right, I promise.
All right, so I'll make more adjustments to the future video shows, but what we're going to try to do is have a video show up every week on Friday. So that's why the Robin Hobb one won't go up till November 9th. The Ted Williams one will go up on November 2nd. That's not the Ted Williams interview. That's the kickoff of the Dirty Streets of Heaven. October 26th will be the Sword and Laser Video Book Club wrap-up of Cloud Atlas, which you should be reading right now, unless you've already read it. October 29th will be our next audio podcast. So there you go. That's the calendar.
A lot of stuff coming up. Let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, of course. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. You know, we tend to err on the side of sci-fi fantasy. And it also includes audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. So we are, of course, we've already kind of spoiled it for you, but we are reading Tad Williams's Dirty Streets of Heaven as our November book pick. It's also available on Audible. Unfortunately, it's not available for Whisper Sync, which is bumming me out. So you can't do the Audible / Kindle version and sync between those two. Heartbroken, very sad.
I can't wait to start that. Right now, it's not every book. It's going to take a while for them to get everybody to agree to that.
Yeah, but if you want to download that book, you can head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. And even if you're not a member, or even if you have already been a member for a long time, tell your friends, tell your family, audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
Hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, you know.
Tell Audible on Twitter how much you love them and that they should keep supporting the Sword and Laser.
And thank you to those who have done so. We see all your tweets and it's awesome to see your support. And yeah, it's been rad. And a lot of you really, really enjoyed the Gail Carriger interview we just had, actually.
We did too, but we're happy you did as well.
Yeah, Let's see. There was some really great. First of all, thank you to @Stamper who said, I love Audible. And it's all thanks to Sword and Laser. And there was another one, too, that said someone just signed up for Audible UK because of Sword and Laser, because they want to listen to Cloud Atlas, which was awesome. And then a lot of people were excited about Gail being on, especially because she was there, quote, in costume, which I loved. She
or in character, I guess.
In character, yeah. In costume. Although I don't think that is a character. I think that's actually just...
Well, she pretty much said, I'm Gail Carriger now.
Yeah, she's in
no,
the role.
No longer a pseudonym. It's, yeah.
So thank you all for the support and for checking out the shows. We really appreciate it. Oh, and one more thing we forgot to mention. When you get your free book, don't forget to add a second book free at audible.com/Sanderson. Audible is giving away Brandon Sanderson's novella Legion free. If you just want this book, there is no trial, just the book for free. That is www.audible.com/Sanderson, S-A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, to download it today.
All right, let's get on to our interview.
This evening, we are joined by graphic novelist, among many other things, Chi Willow Wilson. Should we call you Willow? Is that okay?
Willow's great. I tell people the G is silent.
Ah, perfect. So I was looking at your website, and I noticed that not only are we both born in the same year, but we were also going to college in Boston at the same time. But you ended up going to Cairo after graduating. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened?
Strangely enough, it was a BU connection. I had a professor who was Egyptian who was retiring that year to go back to Cairo to help run an English language high school. And they were looking for teachers who were native speakers of English. And I had been wanting to travel and live in the Middle East for a while, and it seemed like a great opportunity, especially because the jobs front at home was not great. So it was really a twist of fate. And I went to Cairo. My contract was only for 1 year, but I ended up meeting and marrying the man I love and staying there and kind of making it my second home. So I was there for the latter half of Bush 2 version 1 mm-hmm. and most of Bush 2 version 2. So it was a really fun place to be, and had a huge impact on both how I think about the world and what I write. So it's been a very, very impactful place in terms of my writing and my life. I know impactful is not a word, and I'm just like, yeah. But you know what I mean.
So how much did that change impact your writing?
It's immeasurable, really. I mean, when I left the U.S., I was sort of a very naive 20-year-old who hadn't really been out of the country before, and had a not a super sheltered, but a somewhat sheltered, regular middle class upbringing. And so to be suddenly thrown into this place that was totally unlike anything that I had ever encountered before had an enormous, enormous effect on how I saw myself in the world and how I saw the world around me. And it was really, in a strange way, like a creative homecoming, because I'd wanted to write basically my whole life. I've never really aspired to do anything else. But there was a purpose and kind of a fire missing from my work until that point. I mean, I was also very, very young, obviously. And Cairo, to me, was really the kick in the butt that woke me up, and the ideas started coming like water. And it's really found its way into almost everything I write, even when I'm not directly addressing things that are going on in the Middle East or anything like that. It's still sort of there as kind of a nexus in my mind.
When did you come back to the United States?
I came back right before the election in 2008. Yeah.
So you were watching the Arab Spring from over here. What was that like?
It was terrifying. I have to tell you, that was a really strange year. I was finishing up writing Aleph the Unseen, which is my novel that just came out this past July, which is about sort of a hacker, started revolution. And at the time, I was I was thinking that I was sort of overselling the whole idea of the importance of the internet on youth culture in the Middle East. And it turns out that I wasn't. It was a very, very odd time to be on this side of the water. I mean, I'd been watching all of these important things kind of unfolding with regard to the role of social media on politics and the amazing ways that people, especially young people in the Middle East, were using technology to reach out to one another in really unprecedented ways, considering the fact that so many other forms of media were so highly censored. And I knew it was going to be important, but I didn't know how important it was going to be. And so to be here, and I was heavily pregnant at the time that the revolution broke out in Egypt, and sort of isolated from my husband's family, with whom I'm very close, and not knowing what was going on in Cairo, was a very, very weird and stressful time. And at the same time, I was rushing to finish this novel, which had sort of eerily predicated a lot of the events that were taking place in Tunisia and in Egypt. So it was a head-on collision between life and art in the most visceral way imaginable. And I hope never to repeat it, exciting as it was.
Now,
especially the perfect storm of being pregnant on top of all of that, I can imagine.
Oh my God, it was like it's a triple whammy.
Did you go back and make any changes to the story since you were still writing it because of current events?
You know, it's funny. I had to. There was a lot at the beginning of the book, which was very theoretical when I wrote it, but which was sort of eclipsed by real events after we started working on the book and editing it. And so there were a lot of hypotheticals that I'd put in there about certain bloggers in Egypt being arrested and how this tied into other things. And I had to go back and rework that and add in the whole aspect of Tahrir Square, which had suddenly become this byword all over the planet for revolution. So I did have to go back and add a significant level of detail to take the events of the book from the theoretical into the real, which was very strange.
I'm curious what you think the prospects are for Egypt now. Are you hopeful?
I'm cautiously hopeful, which is, I think, the attitude of a lot of people who live there. I mean, I think everybody knew that the transition to democracy was going to be stressful and turbulent, as it was here in the United States, you know, after our own revolution in 1776. Now, with the hindsight of 200 years, we can kind of look back and laugh and write musicals. But at the time, it was extremely tense, and it remained that way for decades. And so I think what's really frustrating to a lot of people living in Egypt and also elsewhere in the Middle East where these revolutions have gone on is that change is coming very slowly. There's backsliding. There's a lot of infighting between different factions. And it makes the future very uncertain. And so I know that a lot of the initial excitement that accompanied the revolution has kind of given way to a more cautious, sober, we need to really sit down and figure out what we're going to do next kind of attitude, which is what I'm seeing now.
Now, you mentioned your novel, Alif the Unseen, but most of your writing credits up until 2008 seemed to be centered around journalism. What led you to start writing fiction? Because your graphic novel Cairo, I think, was your first fictional effort to get published?
It was. And oddly enough, Cairo was something that I started writing way back in 2003, literally less than 24 hours after moving to Cairo itself. It was really kind of that fast that I was kind of sitting in my apartment in the city and everything I knew was turned on its head. And I said, there's a book in this. Mm. And I just started writing. It kind of sat around and circulated between various editors until it, several years later, found a home at Vertigo, which is an imprint of DC Comics. In the meantime, while it was kind of floating around and being revised and unrevised, I discovered that there was a lot going on in the very real world that I wanted to talk about and that I was not seeing in the Western press. And so journalism seemed like an obvious next step to get those stories told.
Now that you've done both graphic novels and full novels, among all the other different kinds of writing that you've undertaken, what's the process like? How is it different between doing a graphic novel and a full novel?
You know, I'm really glad that I did comics and graphic novels first, because I feel like there's this really unique discipline that comes along with writing a script. You have to be very, very aware of how many panels you're putting on a page. You have to be aware of how much dialogue you're using, because you can't crowd the art. And so it really, really takes a different set of creative muscles than any other media that I've ever had the pleasure of writing. And so to me, switching over to prose fiction was like being let off the leash. I was like, oh my gosh, I can use as many words as I want and not out of space or taking up too much of the page. And so I felt like the discipline that I'd gained and sort of the insights into plot and story arcs and all of that great stuff was really, really useful to me sitting down to write fiction, prose fiction, I should say, because it sort of made me take a second look at a lot of bad habits that it's very easy to get into when you're writing prose fiction. You know, like the subplot that you like, but that says nothing and goes nowhere. And, you know, a lot of sort of the things that you're tempted to do when you have a theoretically unlimited amount of space. So I thought about Alethiocene in a very comic book kind of way, in terms of boiling it down to the action and the plot as it unfolded, and how these very, very bizarre, strange things that happened would have an emotional impact on each one of the characters in a different way. And you know, it was fun. It really, really felt to me like a hybrid experience. Somewhere between writing a script for a comic book and writing a literary novel.
I want to hear a little more about Alethiocene. You touched on it a bit earlier. I've seen reviews compare it to Neal Stephenson, Neil Gaiman, Philip Pullman. Obviously, there's comparisons to be made with Saladin Ahmed in some ways. Just tell us a little about what it's about.
All of those comparisons, first off, make me want to do like the Wayne's World thing and fall down.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure.
That's some pretty good company. Yeah.
Yeah, it's luminous company. it was a really, really, for me, this is the favorite thing that I've ever written. It's an urban fantasy adventure about a struggling, young, disaffected hacker in an unnamed Middle Eastern emirate who falls in love with the wrong girl who jilts him. And sort of because of that, he has to go on the run from this very shadowy state security agent who may or may not have powers at his command beyond those of simple surveillance technology. There are genies involved. There's a book that may or may not be many hundreds of years old, or maybe a hoax. So it's fun. It has political elements, but it also has a really breakneck pace to it. It's a lot of fun. And, it's been a huge pleasure for me to see that it's been as much fun for people to read as it was for me to write.
I'd also like to hear more about your experience as a female author of graphic novels and comics. I mean, that's we don't get a lot of that, frankly. What's that been like for you?
It's been a really for me, it's been a really fun experience. I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of women editors, which are less of a rarity in comics than are women creators, which is strange, and I don't quite understand why. But it was Joan Hilty who edited Cairo, who worked at DC Comics until very recently, who sort of gave me my big break. And then I was very lucky to be mentored by Karen Berger, who has been at the helm of Vertigo Comics since the beginning, and also working with Janine Schaefer, who's a wonderful editor at Marvel Comics. So I never felt like the atmosphere that I was working in lacked women. And I think nobody was really aware of the extent of the dearth of female creators until both Marvel and DC were kind of reorganized And a lot of the remaining female talent was kind of edged out. And I think at DC, the percentage of female creators dropped from something like 12% to 2%. These numbers are available on Nalion, and I'm not remembering them exactly. So those may be not exact, but it's close at any rate. And I think that was the point at which everybody, including me, sort of stepped back and said, wow, this is a serious issue. And I think people have been struggling ever since to kind of remedy that and to ask the tough questions about why that is and what can be done to solve it. And so it's a very strange time, I think, to be working in the comics industry, whether you're a man or a woman, because there are really big questions being asked of who the audience is for comics and how best to reach them and what kind of characters they respond to. So it's a real turning point, I think, in the history of the medium.
Now, obviously, every author takes a different path to publication, and you're going to have different answers to this question at different stages in your career, I expect. But we have a lot of aspiring authors in the audience, and we always like to get authors' perspective on what they would say to them if a new author is just getting started. What kind of advice would you give them?
I think the best advice that was ever given on this topic was by Neil Gaiman, who said simply, number one, write. Number two, finish things. And as funny as that sounds, I think if you can do both of those things, you're really ahead of 90% of the other people who would like to be writers.
I know how that feels. I've started a lot of things and not finished anything. So
it's so easy to get discouraged, bored. Say you want to move on to something else. And you know, sometimes it's really a matter of just strapping yourself into your desk chair and saying, you know, by hook or crook, I'm going to finish this short story, this novella, this novel. And after that, what happens, happens. But what I tell people who want to go into, I guess the best word is the mainstream publishing industry, is that there's really no alchemy to it. If you've written something that is number one, complete, and number two, to the best of your ability, chances are you will eventually find somebody to publish it. I literally got my very wonderful literary agent out of the agent phone book, Jeff Herman's Guide to Editors and Agents and What They Want, or whatever it's called. I leafed through, I found about half a dozen agents who'd agented books that I liked, and I queried them. And a few said no, and a few never wrote back, and one said yes. And I've been working with him for, gosh, probably 8 years now. So there is in the end no real magic. It's not a handshake business. It really has. There is a lot of competition. There's a ton of competition, but the way in is fairly straightforward. For comics, it's totally the opposite. You have to know people who know people. You know, you hang out at the Hyatt Bar at San Diego Comic-Con and sort of rub elbows with the high and mighty. I tell people who want to get into comics that I had 1 year fairly early in my career. I was still quite young. I was 22 or 23 when I wrote for the Atlantic Monthly and the New York Times and several other publications. And it was a really big year for me. And I tell people that was easier than breaking into comics.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. So it does vary industry by industry. And there are particular quirks for each, category of writing that you may want to pursue. I have no idea what goes on in Hollywood. People have talked to me about screenwriting and I have conversations and it's like I'm not even speaking the same language. But the most competitive yet weirdly the easiest arena to break into is books, because the method is so straightforward. You query agents, you find one that you like and who likes you, and then they go off and try to sell your stuff to publishers. And it's like applying to college. But it's really about the writing, you know. It really is about sticking with the thing that you believe in and seeing it through to the end and resisting the temptation to throw it out or get frustrated. And if you can do that, then whether or not you publish, you are a writer because you have written.
So now I guess my final question would be for you. What genre books and novels would you recommend to readers just getting into genre fiction?
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's a hard question. It's probably the hardest
There's
question.
Only millions to choose from.
There's only millions. Well, you know, my great loves are for like the 1980s high fantasy / sci-fi. My dad read all of the Dragonrider novels to me.
Oh,
the-
yeah.
When I was a kid, and now going back to them as an adult, I see that he judiciously censored some of the juicy bits because stuff is like, I have no idea that that one. Oh, geez, this is wow. I also loved Mercedes Lackey's Valdemar books, which are the ones with the talking horses in them, mm-hmm. which I got into when I was 12 or 13. You know, I think the reason that I was drawn to those two writers is because they were so good at creating entire universes in a very judicious way, without a lot of cumbersome backstory. You know, they just kind of ease you in and you feel, you believe, you know, from the first few pages, you believe. And they're quite dated now. I mean, they're very 1980s kind of in there. Speech and execution, and I mean, so it's a little bit like a blast from the past, but I think that's a mark of a really, really good genre writer, is that you believe it. You believe it from the first chapter. You enter into that world and you feel completely absorbed by it, and it stays that way until you leave again. And you know, I have in the past couple of years been going back to some of those old books that I loved as a young adult. And rereading them, and it's amazing how restful it feels to pick up a book that just lets you escape, especially because living sort of between two parts of the world that are always, you know, contending with each other, and you know, between which there's always this constant political tension. It's just amazing to be able to put all that away and escape. And to me, that is the beauty of genre fiction.
Well, those are excellent suggestions. Willow, thank you so much for joining us. Where can everyone follow your work online?
You can go to my website, gwillowwilson.com, and I'm always on Twitter, at gwillowwilson. So those are two excellent ways to get in touch with me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was just great. She has such an interesting perspective with the different kinds of life experience she's had as compared to a lot of the different authors we've spoken to in the past.
Yeah, I knew we were going to have a really interesting conversation with her just because of her background and because of the nice things that luminaries have said about her work and her writing. But really, really smart person and really fun to talk to. What a great interview.
Absolutely. And in case you missed it, that is gwillowwilson.com to follow all of her blog posts and all of her upcoming book releases and everything. And I'm definitely going to check some of those out. I've never been a huge graphic novel reader, but I think I'm definitely intrigued enough to check it out. I just haven't had good suggestions in the past or enough suggestions.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm rowing that same boat.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to drop us a line, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. And all of our discussions happen over on goodreads.com. I feel bad I forgot to check the voicemails tonight. But if you want to leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. That is 415-7-SWORD-6. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.